From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Dave Iverson. Coming up, California is about to undergo a fundamental change to our criminal justice system. Starting October 1st, counties will take responsibility for jail, parole, and oversight for thousands of offenders, a job now managed by the state. It's sure to reduce prison overcrowding, but will counties be able to do it without compromising public safety? We'll talk with key players involved in designing and implementing the new system. And as always, we want to hear from you, too. We'll get started with Forum right after this. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Dave Iverson. Well, it's no secret that California prisons are bursting at the seams, and the federal courts are ordering the state to reduce its inmate population by more than 30,000 inmates within a couple of years. And a key part of the state's plan, which is supported by Governor Brown and the legislature, is AB 109. And starting in October, it gives counties control of low-level nonviolent offenders and parolees, a job that's now done by the state. It's a fundamental change, and it's filled with high expectations and more than a little bit of fear for public safety. Joining us this hour to talk about the coming changes, first of all, is our Secretary of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, Matthew Cate. He joins us by cell phone up in Sacramento. Secretary Cate, good to have you with us.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, this whole process is called realignment, which is kind of a government bureaucratic word. But in plain English, tell us, what is realignment? What's the goal of it?
Well, primarily the goal is to ensure that the right jurisdiction has the right offender and that we're using our money efficiently. So, for example, last year in California, the prison system had 47,000 offenders serve 90 days or less. And we really see that as a waste of resources and something that local government can handle much better. So we're shifting over a period of time. Those offenders will start to come to counties, both for supervision in the communities when they've served their full sentences and for their term of imprisonment. And we're also realigning the funding. And so up to $1 billion the first year will go to local government to handle those responsibilities.
You talked about that short-term imprisonment, the revolving door. Some call it the churn of inmates in and out and in again into the system. Is this realignment going to change that flow in and out and in and out of prison? Or is it just going to reduce that flow, or is it just going to change who's in charge of it?
Well, you know, the sheriffs and the jails, they're built on a revolving door system. I mean, people serve misdemeanor terms for days, you know, 2 days or 5 days for a drunk driving offense, for example. That's really what they're made for. Prisons are made for high-level offenders serving long periods of time. California's just gotten away from that over the years, and so we really think that by sending parole violators in particular to have them serve their terms for their violations in jail, we're going to end the revolving door in California in large part.
And I mentioned at the top that there is a court order, the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, confirming what the Ninth Circuit panel of judges did earlier, which is to order a reduction in the prison population. How important is this realignment, this AB 109, this change that you described? How important is that in the overall plan to get down the prison population?
Well, it's our best hope. We do suspect that we'll see a pretty large reduction in our overall population within the first year. Without it, and we've reduced the population by about 12,000 over the last 3 years through various means. But this will, we believe, in large part, take care of the requirements of the Supreme Court without having to release anyone early. And that's really what we were afraid of, is that we would have to somehow open the gates and send these inmates into the communities unprepared and before they're ready. And instead, they'll serve their sentences. They just can't come back to serve those very short terms.
And we should say, as you just sort of alluded to, that this is a prospective system. It's not on October 1st, all these people aren't going to suddenly be under the control of the counties, right? It's just going forward.
Yeah, that's right. So anybody who's supervised by parole today, for example, will continue to be supervised by parole. Anybody who's in prison today will serve their complete sentence and be released as scheduled under the old law. It's just that after October 1st, if you're a low-level offender, you'll be supervised by your probation department. If you're a high-level offender, you'll be supervised by parole. Similarly, if you're convicted of a lower-level crime, you'll serve your time in jail. And the serious offenders, the violent offenders, the sex offenders will go to prison, and we'll reserve those expensive prison beds for the worst of the worst.
You make it sound very routine, very easy to implement. What concerns do you have, and what is the state going to do to make sure that the counties don't fail?
Well, it's easy. It's good in concept, or easy in concept. It'd actually be very complicated in practice. Because we, you know, obviously the sheriffs, they don't have enough room right now for every one of these offenders. And so we need to get them some money, because they have 10,000 beds across the state they can't use because they don't have funding for staff. Secondly, we need to help them build some additional jail capacity. Third, we need to help the probation chiefs get staffed up so they can handle supervision. And we need to make sure we have some evidence-based programs. The whole intent here from the governor's perspective is that we think local government can actually do a better job of handling these low-level short-term offenders, and we may actually see better results, shrinking the pie of criminality, if you will.
That's Matthew Cate, Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. I want to bring in Joan Petersilia now. She's co-director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center. Professor Petersilia, good to have you with us this morning.
Delighted to be here.
So you've been listening to Secretary Cate. What would you add to what he says in terms of what's going to happen come October 1st? How big a deal do you think it is, first of all?
Well, I think it's probably the most significant criminal justice reform we've ever seen in California. It really changes the penal code so that lower-level offenders who now would have served perhaps a term of 3 years in state prison will now, in fact, be under the jurisdiction of counties, and county sheriff and probation will be in charge of their sanctioning. As the secretary said, it's great in concept. The devil is going to be in the details. Will counties be able to ramp up quickly enough after October 1st to implement those evidence-based programs, whether they be electronic monitoring, work release, substance abuse programs, programs for the mentally ill, anger management program, drunk driving programs? You know, we have starved counties for many, many years now, and most of those programs no longer exist. So counties are going to have to very quickly issue RFPs to get providers.
Request for proposals.
Correct. Request for proposals to get vendors who want to come in and provide these services. And so that is one of the key points. The other point that the secretary mentioned is, firstly, because we won't be able to ramp up probably rehabilitation programs as quickly, we are going to have to also expand jail capacity. Most counties have overcrowded jails, just like our state prisons. And so the sheriffs are going to have to expand bed capacity, as well as probation and sheriffs are going to have to expand staffing.
Now, we're hearing from some counties. I've heard this from Los Angeles Sheriff Lee Baca. We hear it in San Francisco from Mike Hennessy, that there right now there is room in the jails. So you're saying that there's a lot of county variation, I guess, in terms of how each county approaches the crime and punishment.
Right. There is. There are about 10,000 free jail beds, but they're not distributed evenly across the counties. L.A., for example, expanded its jail capacity about 8 years ago, and it's got excess. Some other counties do as well. And partly that's because the crime rate has been going down in California. And so lower level offenders have actually, less of them have been coming into the jail. Don't forget, all of this depends on what crime rates were last year. If the criminal population decides to increase criminality, then that's another pressure point that we've got to consider.
Matthew Cade, I know you need to leave us in just a few minutes, so I want to bring you back in before we let you go. That question of money, I know that the legislation that the governor signed will send some money down to the counties, but what guarantee is there that, A, it's going to be enough money to do what counties need to do, and B, that that money will be there in 2, 3, 4 years?
Well, I think on the short term, really, there isn't enough money for everyone to do things exactly as it's done today. So we really can't afford to have the counties incarcerate short-term offenders for the same, like, for example, technical violation of parole. I think we need to get some innovative programs where we pick these guys up, they serve flash incarceration, a short period of time, a wake-up call, rather than these long periods of time that they're serving now in prison. Secondly, we need the rehabilitative programs to work. We've got to get fewer people committing crimes so that, you know, it just doesn't cost as much to run our criminal justice system. So I mean, we really need this to, we need to do the job better for the money to work short term. Long term, the governor has committed that we will continue to do everything we can to get a guaranteed stream of funding for law enforcement. You know, that's one of the governor's core promises to local law enforcement, to county government, city government. And so, but you know, we need at this point either voter approval for that funding stream, or we need Republican help in getting those votes, and we haven't been able to do that yet.
And just a quick question. You say that there's not enough money for the counties to do all the programs that are necessary. The state isn't doing it either, are they? I mean, how, what kinds of services are being provided to inmates right now before they get out of prison?
Not nearly enough. Up to 50% of the offenders in prison will do nothing but sit on the bunk and walk the yard before they're released. And it's a big public safety problem. Again, the prisons is just an incredibly expensive way to go about this process. We have 18 federal court orders regarding health care and everything else we're trying to follow. I think the counties can do this more efficiently as far as their availability to handle these offenders, and that should give them additional funds to invest in evidence-based programs to get these guys jobs and education and drug and alcohol services, the other things that we know are necessary for them to be successful in the community.
All right. Secretary Cade, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Matthew Cade, Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. You're listening to Forum, and this morning we're talking about a big change coming up in California to what we call realign the way that criminal justice is handled to give counties more responsibility for nonviolent low-level offenders. Our guests are Joan Petersilia, who's a criminologist, co-director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center. And I want to bring in another voice right now, Jim Nielsen. He is a state assemblyman representing Chico, Redding, and other parts of Northern California, and formerly chairman of the Board of Prison Terms in California from 1991 to 2000. Assemblyman Nielsen, good to have you with us.
Good morning, folks.
Listen, I want to ask you, we've heard a lot of hope, high expectations for this program. What are your thoughts about what's coming down to the counties starting October 1st?
They'll be overwhelmed. This will be a public safety and justice disaster.
Why is that?
There will be mass victimization. The individuals who will be returned into the community and under local authority, there are not the local resources to deal with it. The probation officers would attest to that. By the way, one of the fundamental failures, most people engaged in this debate do not understand the fundamental difference between parole and probation. But these individuals are unrehabilitated. They will be getting into the community a lot sooner. They will have a lack of resources to deal with them. It will be much more difficult to sanction their continued criminality. In fact, in many cases, it will not be sanctioned at all. It will be a much more costly and cumbersome process because now instead of an administrative process dealing with parolees, it will become a judicial process. That entails all new levels of due process consideration. Judge's discretion and sentencing has been limited by this. That's the public safety menace.
But we have in California right now, we have a recidivism rate, depending on whose numbers you look at, somewhere between 60% and 75%. In other words, about two-thirds of the inmates who leave state prison end up going back for some kind of parole violation. The prisons are overcrowded. I mean, you don't think the system's working now as it is, do you?
No, and this is only going to make it worse because the rehabilitative resources are not going to be improved, and local government cannot do it any more efficiently than the state if they don't have the resources. The funding stream that is now available to local government will not be sufficient. It's at best 70%, and in fact, because social welfare programs, or if you will, rehabilitative programs, now have a higher priority than law enforcement, meaning cops on the beat, and sheriff deputies in the community, then it's even going to be harder to deal with this population.
You mentioned finish your thought.
A phased-in approach might work, but not just dumping it on the counties, and I do not have any comfort that the funding stream will be there. I predict in all realignment into this proposal, the public safety and the rest of realignment, within 3 years, the state will say, we don't have the money, you go and fund it yourselves at the local government level, and the Steinberg bill, which gives them that authority, local government, that is the evil portent of where this is all headed.
As you said, Assemblyman Nielsen, most counties, in fact, almost all counties, are going to be now the parolees will be under the control of the chief probation officers. And I want to bring in David Muhammad. He is the chief probation officer for Alameda County. And David Muhammad, you've been listening to this conversation. How do you feel about this responsibility you're going to have in just a few months?
Well, one, I agree that this is potentially one of the biggest criminal justice reforms that we've seen in California in a very long time. The issue, I agree with the Assemblyman on the issue of funding. We must ensure that this isn't just 1 year or 5 year funded, and after that, the locals are scrambling to find the funding because that would be a disaster. But as far as the locals doing a better job than the state, I think that's one, unfortunately, it's a low bar. Right. So I think at the very worst, it'll be the same as what we have now. But in most places, it'll be much, much better than what we have now. Again, A, there's not a single person being released earlier than they would have been released. B, most of what we're talking about is probation taking over where parole was. And the vast majority of people don't even know what the difference of that is. And probation over the last several years have far more better practices around evidence-based practices and rehabilitative services. And just one thing, the state a few years ago passed something called SB 678, which was putting probation in the job of reducing the prison population. Probation did that significantly, and which is partially what gave hope that AB 109, when realignment, can happen effectively throughout the state.
You said most people don't know the difference between probation and parole, and somebody even Nielsen said that as well. Just give us a quick explainer on that. What is the difference?
Prior to AB 109, the easy way to think of it is parole is state when you get out of state prison and you're supervised by a state agency, parole, and probation is county instead of going to jail or prison, or if you only go to jail and you can get out on probation. Locally, county run throughout the state, each county runs a probation department. Parole is a statewide entity.
So are you going to have to hire a lot more probation officers? What are you going to do with the money that the state is giving to your county?
Absolutely. We have to hire more probation officers so that we're making sure we have the supervision level that these people getting out of prison and the other people who wouldn't be going to prison get the appropriate level of both supervision as well as services.
Joan Petersilia, let me bring you back in here. What do you see as the, you know, the hope and the fear for these changes that are coming down?
Well, I think the hope is that the counties can do it better. They will have about $25,000 per offender to invest. And they can invest in what's now being called evidence-based programs. So there is now a body of research that tells counties if you focus on the right kind of offender with the right kind of program with the right kind of staff, we can actually reduce recidivism by about 30%. And so that's the kind of the motivation for this approach, that we could do things better. We could reduce that 70% recidivism rate down to something that might be 45 or 50%. Over time, then, that will reduce our prison population and the tremendous cost that California is paying for its prison system. So that's the hope.
Let me just stop you there. And maybe this comes into the second part of this, but in addition to reducing recidivism, Are you also increasing public safety, or is it going to be the same? I mean, what's the hope there?
Well, no, because when you reduce recidivism, remember that recidivism means a new victim. So as we reduce recidivism, we will in fact be reducing victimization, and there is your public safety benefit. So it's a win-win. When you get offenders off a criminal lifestyle, non-addicted, out of homelessness, on their medications, everybody wins. The state saves money, and victims aren't victimized. So that's the hope. The fear is that it really won't happen, that counties won't use their money to invest in proven programs, that they will not have the kind of the long-range thinking about what this is going to take. It is not simple, that you can't just pull them off the shelf and say, let's do this program or that program. And so this is a massive experiment about whether or not California can get this right or not. And that's, I think, both the potential and also a little bit of the fear.
And will this, if it works, or even just the fact that we're trying it, does that bring California more in line with other states, or does this put us out in front in terms of trying something progressive? Where would you put
well,
us?
Well, in some ways, this is putting us way out in front. We are doing something more massive than any other state in the country. So when we didn't do anything for so long, now all of a sudden we are doing a massive, massive, and I cannot say it strong enough, reform. We are changing everything about the criminal justice system, including the penal code. Other states have done somewhat of the same thing in terms of their use of evidence-based programs, but they've usually done it through a sentencing commission. So it's more unified at the state level. The other issue that's going to come up in California is that we have given each county, all 58 counties, a great amount of discretion about how they wish to sanction people, whether or not they want to send them just to jail or to programs, how much money they want to spend on them. I mean, we have allowed discretion to, in fact, go throughout the state of California so that we will have quite disparate sentencing throughout our 58 counties now.
If I can just say one
David
thing
Muhammad,
about that.
Sure.
I just was formerly the Deputy Commissioner of Probation in New York. Now, New York City prisons are 50% capacity, right, at a time when New York crime is plummeted. And so although this is huge, we're so far behind that this actually doesn't get us in front, right? So even this, the estimates is this will get us to 110% capacity in our state prisons, right? So there's many places that are far under their capacity. And I think New York is a great place to show that half of the prisons are full and their crime has plummeted. And so you can show a reduction in incarceration and a reduction in crime.
Assemblyman Nielsen, just about a minute before we take a break, but you represent some of the more conservative counties in California, Shasta, Colusa, those sorts of counties, Butte County. Do you imagine that those counties are going to take a different approach in terms of how to spend that money that the state is going to give them than, say, San Francisco or Alameda? Assemblyman Nielsen, are you there? All right, I think we've lost him. But Joan Petersilia, what are your thoughts about that? Just quickly, and we'll come back to this after the break. But you mentioned there's going to be, every county has more discretion. Is it a good thing, or is it a recipe for, problems?
Well, I mean, the counties think it's a good thing because basically they will be in control of their own system. They can develop the programs that fit their culture, fit their population. Other counties will be quite punitive and I think will expand jail capacity only.
All right.
Will see that.
I'm sorry to cut you off. We are going to come back and continue that part of the conversation. And if you'd like to join us, give us a call, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or email us. It's forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Dave Iverson. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning for Dave Iverson. And this hour, we're talking about a big change coming to California's criminal justice system, realignment, where counties are going to have responsibility for low-level nonviolent offenders, control that the state now has over their parole and rehabilitation. If you'd like to join us here on Forum, tell us what you think about these coming changes. Does it concern you in terms of public safety, or do you think it's a good idea? 866-733-6786 is the number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org. You can also post a comment on our website or go to the KQED Forum Facebook page. Our guest this hour, David Muhammad. He's the Chief Probation Officer in Alameda County. Also, Joan Petersilia. She is the co-director of the Criminal Justice Center at Stanford Law School. And joining us by phone, Assemblyman Jim Nielsen, a Republican who represents the northern part of California, including Chico, Redding, and other parts of that northern part of the state, more conservative part, the red part of California, I guess you might say. And Assemblyman Nielsen, earlier I was trying to get your response to the question of how you thought those counties that you represent will be using the money, the millions of dollars that will be sent to the counties from the state to oversee this program.
Well, flexibility is good, but there will be disparate sentencing. There will be disparate parolee sanctions, meaning penalties for those who violate their parole. That disparity will be, in effect, an injustice, and I guarantee you inmate and parolee advocates are going to file lots of lawsuits over that.
But doesn't that already exist?
Well, sure, but this is just inviting even more, absolutely vastly more. And again, you're taking a now administrative process for parolees, and you're making it a judicial process. Keep in mind, this has been tried already in 1992. Called SB 92X, and I won't bore you with the details, but a mini version of this failed. Within 2 years, it was repealed, and everything was changed back the way it was before in terms of how parolees were handled. It also happened in the second year of the Schwarzenegger administration. It was called the New Parole Model. Within a year, that had been thrown in the wastebasket. There are aspects of this can work. I love our probation folks. They are valiant warriors, but it will take an evolution, not a dump, for this to happen. And the bottom line, this is an experiment. And folks, those who are the guinea pigs are our citizens who will be victims. And that is a sorry price to pay.
Joan Petersilia, to what extent does that bother you, this notion of having 58 different criteria, in a sense, for handling these offenders?
Well, it actually doesn't bother me. The disparate sentencing bothers me. But as you said, we have a lot of discretion in that early parole violation phase anyways. Part of the good thing and what the counties insisted in order to get AB 109 passed was that they would have a lot of control. Some of them want to invest in GPS systems because they know that the population coming back to them is higher risk. Others, like, say, San Francisco and some of the Northern California counties, want to invest in drug treatment. They have good models. They believe in them. They think they can make a difference with that. Some of the Central Valley that I've been working with want to invest in day reporting centers and education and literacy programs. They believe they can make a big difference with that. So there is a difference in the risk profiles of who comes home to each of these counties. They don't all get the same people back. They have different risk and needs. And so the local discretion, if you will, the negative side is you get disparate sentence. The positive side is you get to customize your programs to different offender groups.
And David Muhammad, let's not forget that these folks who the county, your county, will have responsibility for coming in October, these are high-need people. They have substance abuse problems, mental health problems. They have difficulty getting jobs. So they're going to need vocational training, sometimes language skill. I mean, this is a huge social – are we turning this from a criminal justice problem into a social service problem for the counties?
Well, remember that this was the needs they had that they went in, right? Often the problem of why people turned to crime was some of these social challenges that they had that went unserved and untreated. So we will have now an exacerbated problem certainly coming out the door. But I just want to make the point that, there's disparate sentencing now, right? So there was a good study that came out of Santa Clara University by David Ball that said, San Bernardino and Alameda County have about the same crime rate, but San Bernardino sends about three times as many people to state prison as Alameda County and costs the state about $100 million more dollars because of that difference in sentencing. And so what this bill begins to get at, and again, this is just a small portion of the population that's in prison. This is just the nonviolent, non-serious, non-sex offenders. And I just want to make that point because it hasn't been made yet, that the folks that are being, quote unquote, realigned are only people who have been the current people in state prison for nonviolent, non-serious, non-sex offenses, and the new people who get convicted of nonviolent, non-serious, non-sex offenses. That's the only population of offender that we're talking about in this bill.
And that difference in the way counties deal with crime, San Bernardino, Riverside, for example, Kern County do tend to send more people to prison than Alameda or San Francisco. How does that affect the amount of money that they're going to be getting from the state in this realignment system?
It's a great question, and there's been this terrible incentive to send more people to prison. And the spirit of this legislation is, as Secretary Kate said, to not do the same thing, to not send as many people to incarceration. But Alameda County, for instance, that has historically not sent as many people to prison as many other places, Kern County is half the population of Alameda County, but gets about $3 million more dollars because the allocation formula was based upon how many people you currently have in prison, which is a fundamentally flawed way to allocate the money that the state has given out, because we have a much higher crime rate certainly than Kern, so we have those people to deal with. We've just done a better job of effectively dealing with that population.
Although if the crime rate is higher, some might say you've done a worse job.
Well, that's how we have handled, but the recidivism rate isn't higher. The recidivism rates are about the same. And so how we've handled them locally, because many of them still go to jail. They go to our jails. They go to different programs. We're just not sending the lower level offender as much to state prison.
All right. 866-733-6786. The number to call if you want to join us this morning. Let's go now to Oakland. Emily is on the line. Welcome.
Hi. I have a question. One of my concerns that I'm hearing is the threat of building more jail beds in several of the counties. And my understanding at looking at California's history is that if we build them, we're going to fill them. And instead, if the state is freeing up billions of dollars to build these jail beds, why aren't we putting all of that money into actually keeping people in the community, having more services? We know those have real public safety outcomes, instead of there being this assumption that building capacity on our beds is a good thing.
Let me ask Assemblyman Nielsen about that balance between building more capacity and increasing rehab programs.
That's what it has to be. And increasing rehabilitation is a biggest part of the answer. And the earlier the intervention, the better. The intervention with our youth is the most important. It becomes much less efficacious as they have grown into adulthood.
But let me just stop you. Aren't those the kinds of programs that are being cut in this new state budget because there's not enough revenue?
There never have been enough. The billions of dollars over the decades that CDCR has received, every year they come in for more rehabilitative dollars that have made no difference. And there are a lot of reasons why, mostly because they don't track and see if it works and change things when something does not work. That's why the new parole model didn't work, because they didn't change anything. They just named it something else and continued business as usual. But you see, the intervention youth in a 10-year period of time, in a 15-year period of time, then we can visit prisons. But right now, just dumping the unrehabilitated population.
Assemblyman Nielsen, you're kind of cutting out there. I think we're gonna let you go. That cell connection hasn't been the greatest, but I do appreciate your joining us this morning on Forum. Jim Nielsen, State Assemblyman from the Chico, Redding, Northern California area. excuse me, David Muhammad, what would you add to what he just said?
Yeah, I think that last point that the Assembly made was actually Assemblymember made was very good. That we can't call something differently and do the same old thing, and because we will just have the same old poor results that we've been having. But the hope is that the chief probation officers around the state have been gearing up to do something far more productive using evidence-based practices. And the one piece, this money allows us to do more rehabilitative services and not just incarceration, but locally. Every county does make that decision, though. And the last little piece I'll say about the caller is a couple of years ago, the state passed AB 900 specifically to build more local jail space. This pot of money with realignment is not to build more jail space.
Emily, before I let you go, did that respond to your question?
Yeah, but my understanding is that AB 900 has been that money has been freed up, so counties have more access to building jail
That's
beds
true.
In response to realignment. So
That's
that
true.
Was just my concern.
All right, good. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Let's go now to Santa Rosa. Pete is on the line. Welcome.
Hi, Keith. Here.
Thank you for
your excellent program and your guests. I agree with the chief probation officer of Alameda County that this will return nonviolent offenders through our counties who could have been better served before they even entered the system, and this gives them another opportunity to re-own our family members and make them part of the community and make them productive. What do you guys think of that?
Let me just, before I ask, you seem to have some knowledge of the system, perhaps. What makes you...
Coming from is I kind of think the tail's wagging the dog in terms of the economy. I think that the prison guards union and the CDC has done the easiest thing over the years when we had money, which is build more prisons and fill them up. Personally, I think a lot of those people do belong in the community, and they belong to us and their family members. And it would be better and more difficult to work with them, but better than the alternative of just sending them away someplace in state, locking them up, and forgetting about them.
Joan Petersilia, is that part of the thinking behind all this?
Scott?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, Scott, this is David Cugay. I'm the chief probation officer for Kern County. Was asked to join this for the hour, but, I would like to have some input also, but as to...
I'll bring you in just a moment, but let me just get Joan Petersilia to respond to that question. I promise I'll come right back to you.
Yes, I think the reason what the caller just said is kind of connecting prisoners to the local community and their local families is absolutely right, and is exactly why, in fact, law enforcement, the Sheriff's Association, the Police Chiefs Association, has spoken out in favor of AB 109 for that exact reason, partly because they know these people are coming back to their communities, and really, did it just make the person worse to send that individual to prison where he doesn't get rehabilitation, he gets a $200 and a bus ticket back, and he shows up back in that community. So probation, I think, is in a better position to align themselves with their mental health services, their health care services, and get out of their silos and try to bring that money and that coordination along with family members. Let me just say one thing and end with that. What we do know is that family connections are actually more important than any of these programs. If we can, in fact, get people stabilized and reconnected to communities and families, that's one of the chief reasons that people stay out of crime in the long run.
All right, Keith, thanks for the call. Now, David Cugay, apologize for cutting you off there. I just wanted to introduce you properly, the chief probation officer of Kern County, which is home to Bakersfield, and one of the counties known for, I guess, sending a lot of folks to prison. Your response to what you've been hearing?
Well, yes, and in the past, this Kern County has been known to be a very conservative county, but we also have made great strides into developing and implementing evidence-based practices here in Kern County, especially with juveniles. We do have an evidence-based assessment program for both juveniles and adults. We've created programs here to target and to work on what we call criminogenic needs, and those are behaviors and attitudes that are correlated to criminal behavior. So, you know, we've been doing this for several years. I agree that I think we could do a better job locally, but I also agree with Assemblyman Nielsen and also David Muhammad from Alameda that the money is a big concern for us. Right now, the amount of allocation that is sent is not enough to deal with the population we're going to get, and it's not just the people that are going to be returned to Kern County from the state prisons, but then also those that are sentenced from court who would normally go to prison would stay on a local level. So we are looking at about 2,000 in a year to have to deal with. And, you know, the allocation of funding is just not enough. So what we're going to have to do is be very creative in developing programs that are cost-effective, using evidence-based practices, using best practices in order to reduce recidivism. You know, our recidivism in Kern County is very low compared to statewide, and I think it's because the probation department does a very good job, but we have lost 105 staff. My department has lost 105 staff in the last 2 years, so it becomes harder and harder to perform these programs. A lot of programs that were effective in the past, because they were not mandated, were cut because of budget issues.
All right, David Cougay from Kern County. Let me go to some email here. Patrick in Desert Hot Springs down in Riverside County writes, you use the term low-level nonviolent offenders. Can you give examples? For example, how are these convictions considered? Car theft, welfare fraud, residential burglary, major traffic law convictions. Joan Petersilia, can you answer that?
Yes, certainly. The kinds of people that will now stay in the county are possession of a controlled substance, check fraud, miscellaneous grand theft, receiving stolen property, petty theft with a prior of certain offenses. So basically, we will be no longer sending to prison low-level property offenders, possession of drugs, and So those are the kinds of offenders that will no longer go to prison who have in the past gone to prison.
And this is a big population of people the state have already said they didn't want in prison with Prop 36, which is mostly drug users, right? And so we need treatment and rehabilitation.
What if somebody commits a more violent crime? Let's say, you know, they hold somebody up on the street, but they do a plea bargain down to a less serious crime. Are they going to be then in, you know, under the control of the county, or is it about the original crime that they committed or about what they were ultimately convicted
of? It is about the conviction. And so this will, I mean, it's a good question because this will potentially change prosecutor practice. And the DAs are part of the community corrections partnership in every county that decides how the realignment implementation gets done. But yes, if the folks who come out who are under probation, these lower level offenders, if anybody commits a new serious offense, then they're right back in the state prison system.
And so, David Muhammad, when you say it might change what the DAs do, meaning they might be more reluctant to agree to a plea deal?
Correct.
Yeah. Another email here from Wanda in Palo Alto who writes, reducing recidivism requires medical treatment and education. Does California have any chance of producing those services in effective amounts? And once an offender has passed through those two places, does he or she remain recovered if he or she cannot find a job? Can this program work in California's current profile of job availability? David Cougay from Kern County, I don't know what the unemployment rate is like in your county, but statewide it's above or right around 12%, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah,
and it's about the same here in Kern County, but that is one of the issues and areas that we are really focusing on. With adults, I think employability is a greater need than education. But it doesn't. It's not as simple as finding a job and putting that person in the job, and finding him someplace to work. You have to develop that person because a lot of these people that are coming back to us aren't used to, like you and I, get up every morning, go to work, show up on time, put a full day's work in. That mindset has to change. So we have programs here that work with that type of attitude, preparing them for that kind of routine, to be dependable, to show up on time, to work a full day, to go to work, be productive before we even place them in a job. And so it takes some time to do that. But, you know, it's not as simple as just putting them in a job, because they're not going to go unless you get them mentally prepared that this is what they have to do.
Well, on the other end of that equation, Joan Petersilia, you have to have an employer willing to hire them. What's being done in that regard, or what needs to be done?
Well, I think each county has to create a community corrections partnership. And some of the counties are bringing in business leaders, religious leaders, formerly incarcerated mentors. I think this gives us an opportunity to bring that whole community together. And there are jobs. And as the gentleman said, it's not just about jobs, though, but it's a big part of it. But right now there's a huge stigma at being a felon. And part of it might be that we do some training programs, we do some collaborations that this realignment gives us an opportunity to try, that other states are actually using quite successfully.
All right, 866-733-6786, the number to call if you want to join us here this morning. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org. Let's go up to Marin County now. Jane is on the line from Corte Madera. Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a volunteer over at San Quentin, and one of these things that I haven't heard you mention are those two words, three strikes. And my feeling is that I had a student one time, his third strike was he stole a bottle of liquor. And that just really blew my mind. I couldn't figure out. I didn't know what his other two crimes were, but obviously he served his time on those crimes. And so I think that we need to really take a long, hard look at this third strike thing, because I suspect there are a lot of third strikers who really don't belong at San Quentin, let alone maybe incarceration at all in some kind of a, I don't know, but needs help.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. I mean, that certainly a valid point. A little bit off topic, or is it Joan Petersilia? I mean, there are very few, if any, three strikers who are getting out on parole. A lot of second strikers.
Well, the first three-strike case won't come up until 2019 for the parole board to consider. But in terms of prison crowding, the caller is absolutely right. If that was our goal, one out of every four prisoners is now serving a second or third strike sentence. So we would, in fact, be thinking about reform for that. And there is a movement taking place in California now to try to get a three strikes change, perhaps on the ballot, perhaps through the legislature. I think she's right. I think that's the next reform that people have to consider in California, because many of our prisoners are three strikers who are serving 25 years for nonviolent crimes. Many of those crimes now will not even go to prison at all. So it's quite an irony if you think about AB 109, who takes those same people and doesn't even allow them to go to prison at all. And yet we've got somebody sitting in prison probably serving 20 to 25 years for exactly that same crime.
And we should point out, I think there are maybe three dozen states with some version of a three strikes law, but California is the only one where the third strike doesn't need to be a violent offense, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. All right, Jane, thanks for the call. Let's go now to Sonoma County. Don is on the line. Welcome.
Hi. I have a question about where restorative justice fits into parole, probation, specifically restorative justice, meaning if a person commits a crime, that person is trained for a job, placed in a job, and from the earnings pays a partial portion of that to the victim to return them to this pre-state, pre-crime state. And I will take my answer on the radio. Thank you very much for this program.
Thank you, Don. Joan Petersilia, restorative justice, what are your thoughts?
Yes, well, what he's really talking about is victim restitution in this context. And about 90% of all convicted offenders do have victim restitution ordered. The problem is we never really do collect it. Part of it is that people can't pay it. And the other part is that the court just isn't motivated to try to collect it. My sense is that as we move these sanctions back down to the county level, we are going to see a renewed interest in not only collecting restitution, but the broader panoply, if you will, of restorative victim programs, which is bring that victim in for a, let's say, stolen property. Is there a way that offender can actually do community service to help pay not only that particular victim, but the community as victim at large? So I think people haven't yet gotten there, but I think over time, if this realignment a year from now, when the counties can start thinking a little outside the box about bringing in more items such as restorative justice, we might see that.
David Muhammad, one of the reasons that so many politicians have gotten tougher on crime in the past couple of decades, two words, Willie Horton. And we know about him from the 1988 presidential campaign that was released from prison on some kind of a weekend pass and ended up committing murder. How much pressure do you feel as a county probation officer who's going to have control over these parolees and others that you're one Willie Horton away from a big problem?
I was in a meeting last night with a bunch of foundation funders asking about how they could help with the situation. And the first question they asked me about was Willie Horton. And so this is an issue, because this is what the opponents of this will strike upon, because something – there will be recidivism. Some of the recidivism will be serious. And so if somebody wants to magnify a single event and say that this whole effort failed, that's possible for them to do. I think that on the other side, we have to track everything. If we reduce recidivism, if we increase rehabilitation, if we improve outcomes, then we're going to have to also understand that there's going to be some negative outcomes of individuals. But again, I would repeat, these are individuals who would have been released anyway, supervised by one agency instead of another agency. And so I think we're going to improve overall outcomes while we are going to continue to have individual incidents that are not good.
Joan Peterselia, how are we going to evaluate the outcomes and the impact of AB 109 and this whole realignment? How long will it take to know if it's working, where it's not working, and how to improve it?
Well, it's very unfortunate, actually, that when the state is going to invest over $1 billion on this, they didn't choose to actually do any allocation for a statewide evaluation. So each county is left to their own about how they wish to evaluate it. Counties are starting to develop new databases to track recidivism. The other outcome we want to look at is, did they actually get involved in more treatment? What kind of treatment? How long did they stay in treatment? Who did this realignment really work best for? I think over time, as we start getting more complicated information and more detailed information, we can keep the evolution of realignment and keep it evolving and changing so that it really does match the situation that's best for the counties.
If I can say one thing about that, all the counties, has been said, are going to do different programs. Some will do similar programs. We must track, evaluate the outcome so we can say after a year or two or three, here are the best programs that have worked the best in these areas. We need to invest more in them.
And how are you going to be evaluating?
Yeah, we're going to bring in some help from organizations that do evaluation and research, as well as build our own capacity. We've been working with the DA and the sheriff and the public defender and other partners, and we're a strong community corrections partnership in Alameda County, and we've agreed that we're going to track every individual who is realigned, if you will, and what programs they get and what their outcomes, so we can see what worked, what didn't work, stop doing what doesn't work, and do more of what does work.
Just briefly, we are, of course, now in a time of really low, historically low crime rates. What happens if that changes?
That's a huge concern. I think that we need to look at how we've got to this point of low crime rates and do more of that. But I think that there's nothing showing that crime is going to escalate.
All right. David Muhammad, Chief Probation Officer for Alameda County. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks also at the top of the hour to Matthew Cates, Secretary of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, Joan Peterselia, Co-Director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center, David Cugay, Chief Probation Officer from Kern County, and also earlier in the hour, Jim Nielsen, State Assemblyman representing District 2. Up in Northern California. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. And our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Dave Iverson. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.